Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
McLean County health officials say they will craft different messages for various groups that hesitate to get a coronavirus vaccine.
Utilizing community leaders for populations for that, where that makes sense, you know, case managers. There are definitely populations where social media is going to be the way that you reach.
Hear part three of our series on vaccines. Plus, COVID deaths among older people are on the upswing in McLean County. Deaths of all ages from COVID, for that matter. Frontline health workers have a lot of stress and overwork just now. How they deal with that stress matters. And Community Players Theater has an online holiday production filled with schmaltz and good cheer. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. McLean County has announced 101 new coronavirus cases and two deaths in the last day. Both COVID deaths involve long-term care facilities, a man and woman both in their 80s. Bloomington Normal hospitals are over 80% full, but ICU capacity improved slightly. The number of McLean County residents hospitalized fell to 26. More than 1,100 patients are isolating at home. McLean County's retooled COVID relief program has issued its first round of business loans. The Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council is administering those loans. CEO Patrick Hoban says applications spiked after the county doubled the loans to $10,000, removed interest, and made them forgivable for COVID-related improvements, including supplies, technology, and real estate.
They've got a plan to upgrade their systems, and they're buying these COVID-related items anyway. This is a great way to get a refund. That, along with the 0% interest, helped out a ton.
Seven McLean County businesses received $10,000 loans. The county has $600,000 in the program. State Senator Jason Barrickman says the lack of action by a special investigative committee looking into House Speaker Mike Madigan is all the more reason to be able to recall elected officials. The committee was tasked with determining whether Madigan should be disciplined for his role in the ComEd lobbying scheme. It met three times before deadlocking whether to take action. Barrickman says other states allow for recalls when lawmakers don't do their jobs. In Illinois, it's limited to the governor.
It is one that is only allowed in a very unique circumstance in Illinois and only for one office. So I propose to expand that tool to give the public the opportunity to hold public officials accountable.
Barrickman is sponsoring legislation to allow for recalls of constitutional officers, members of the General Assembly, and local leaders. Pekin's congressional delegation is again demanding testing for all inmates and staff at the federal prison there after a second outbreak of COVID-19 swept the facility. Congresswoman Sherry Bustos and U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth have written a letter to the Federal Bureau of Prisons demanding immediate testing at the Pekin Federal Prison. As of yesterday, 353 inmates and 16 staff tested positive for the virus. The first outbreak in October resulted in 74 positive inmates and 3 infected staff. The Bureau of Prisons refused the lawmakers' full testing request after the first outbreak. Federal prosecutors say the former owners of a downtown Peoria landmark hotel committed money laundering and mail fraud. Indictments charge Gary Matthews and Monty Brannon with taking $1.6 million of hotel money for themselves, including $750,000 after the Pere Marquette went into foreclosure. That foreclosure left Peoria City taxpayers on the hook for $8 million in costs sunk into the project via municipal bonds. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Statewide COVID numbers have not spiked 3 weeks after the Thanksgiving holiday, but state data show the rapid rise in the weeks preceding Thanksgiving has not subsided much either. State Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike says some hopeful trends seemed to stall after the long holiday weekend. The run-up in cases over the last 2 months is now translating to more COVID deaths. Another two in McLean County today brings the pandemic total for the county to 75, yet even that number doesn't reflect the true burden on health facilities and the region. McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder says the death toll passing through her office is significantly higher.
We're at 131 COVID-related deaths. Now, those can be residents from the surrounding counties that get transferred in to utilize our wonderful hospital services. So that's quite a bit more than resident county, because we take all of McLean County jurisdiction, the deaths reported.
And what does that say about the burden on the hospitals, since they're seeing more than just the cases that are native to McLean County?
I think there is a burden, and I that's why when we do the daily report of how many are being treated in McLean County, it can be confusing to residents. I know our medical staff, our nursing staff, in both area hospitals are doing outstanding. They're wearing all the protective gear, and they're really doing the best they can. Great open dialogue of how can they help people going through COVID. But they're really working hard, and they're having a lot more patients that are in critical condition from other counties than I think residents of the county realize.
Much has been talked about in the last month that deaths would be increasing because the number of cases has been rising over that time nationwide as well as in Illinois and in the region. What kind of deaths are you seeing?
So when we did a statistical analysis of basically the average age is usually 77.8, so it's the elderly. Of course, there are outliers, you know, of the young person that you reported about and then a very elderly. But the most have comorbidities. They're very vulnerable.
What percentage have come in, say, in the last 2 weeks of those deaths?
So in the last 2 weeks, we've had 31 deaths reported to our office from December 1st through today, December 16th, that are COVID-related deaths. And I think that's markedly high, considering when the opioid epidemic in 2017, the most we had was 40, and that was a lot. So in the last 2 weeks, we've had 30 deaths, and of those, 18 have been in long-term care facilities. So 60% of the COVID-related deaths in the last 2 weeks are from long-term care facilities.
That has to be difficult for coroner's office staff to pick up these people after they pass away.
It is very hard because we all have either grandparents or we have, you know, elderly parents, and it's very difficult knowing that they're vulnerable with this virus. And they're so important to us, and many of us haven't seen our loved ones, or it's hard to access them, which the nursing home staff is trying to not bring the virus in, but the virus is coming in somehow.
There are now 11 active outbreaks at long-term care facilities in McLean County. That is more than the 9 outbreaks that have been closed, so cases that have happened in the last 28 days at 11 such facilities. Over the course of the pandemic, care facilities have tried to put rigorous safety protocols in place. When your people go to long-term care facilities, how are the care facilities doing?
some are doing exceptionally well. And I can tell, you know, sadly one story, and I will not name the long-term care facility, but the staff member was not wearing their mask, and they were sadly twirling it in their fingers. That makes me sad, and it makes me sad for all the other residents there, and families put a high need on and a high want that their loved ones are getting taken care of. Hopefully that was the only person doing that, but I'm unsure.
What happened after you saw that incident of a breach in safety protocols at that long-term care facility?
We reported it to IDPH.
Is that the only such thing you've had to report to IDPH?
Yeah, that's the only incident that we've seen that we reported.
And how long ago was that?
Within the last 2 weeks. I just want everybody, I just want them to realize that someone is, you know, I have a loved one that has COVID and it's devastating. And I just, you know, other people have loved ones that COVID is hurting. And so realize when you just be kind to everybody, be kind to the next person that you may be grocery shopping with, to, you know, wear your mask. Everyone's life is important. Everyone matters.
McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder says COVID deaths of people from long-term care facilities are coming through her office at 3 to 4 per day right now. State data show 284 COVID cases at long-term care facilities in McLean County associated with active outbreaks. Active means cases recorded at a facility within the last 28 days. Put another way, 36% of all COVID cases at long-term care facilities in McLean County connect to recent outbreaks. Ann Yoder says 24% of the total COVID deaths through her office have happened in the last 2 weeks. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Not everyone will have easy access to a COVID vaccine, even when it becomes widely available. And not everyone wants one. In part three of WGLT's series on vaccine preparations, McLean County Health Department Emergency Services Coordinator David Hopper tells Eric Stock vaccine equity is a major focus as they work to achieve herd immunity.
That's an emphasis for our public information staff. We have a couple of staff members whose sole purpose through this vaccine campaign is to work on vaccine equity. And so what they're doing ahead of time is, they're looking at lessons learned from the past. When you look at the 2009 H1N1 response, you look at earlier on how disproportionate COVID affected certain populations. They look at just historical data related to reasons that barriers exist for certain populations. So they've been researching that. They've conducted surveys. Vaccine hesitancy is a very real thing for a variety of reasons. And so, I mean, there's not like a really simple answer, but we have trying to uncover as many of those reasons as possible, and then to craft messaging specific to those populations, just to do whatever we can to kind of break through that.
What kind of targeted communication might that be?
I know I've worked with the team that is doing it, and it's going to be dependent on the population. I mean, that social media can work with some populations, but is not very effective for others. Utilizing a community leaders for populations where that makes sense. Case managers. There are definitely populations where social media is going to be the way that you reach them. So it can really vary by what population that they're targeting.
How will the county be able to track who all has had it, who still needs a second dose, and how will you know when you get to a certain point, a certain saturation point, to get to herd immunity?
In terms of just kind of the generally first, second dose management, ICARE takes care of that immunization registry system. Any provider in the county, the health department, a physician's office, a pharmacy, is required to report administration of all doses within 24 hours of those doses being administered to the ICARE system. And that ICARE system will be generally how anyone, when they show up for their second dose. I mean, we're going to give them a COVID vaccine administration card that will show what day they got a vaccine, what vaccine they received. And so that would indicate when they would be eligible to get their second dose. Not everyone will bring that back, so we will have access to iCare so we can pull records for people at the point of dispensing to make sure that they're eligible for a second dose and to make sure they're getting to get the right manufacturer for their second dose.
What questions or concerns do you have as you approach this with, you know, there's still probably a lot that hasn't fallen into place yet, but once the vaccine's here, everything's gotta go 0 to 60 pretty fast.
I guess for me, I guess you kind of mentioned like kind of what kind of concerns me, and it's optimism more than concern, but I'm just hoping for just flexibility, understanding from our communities, flexibility in that. At least initially, we won't know when vaccine is coming. We won't know how much we're going to get. We will have a very limited time to receive vaccine and get it administered to as many people as we have doses. So there will be very short turnarounds. Like, we may not be able to advertise a point of dispensing, a vaccine clinic, until 2 days before the clinic's going to run. And so people have to be flexible, and they have to respond when they need to, and then understanding that we have a mission that's been given to us by the federal government, reinforced through the state, that only certain people are going to be eligible for the vaccine initially. Eventually, you know, and if it's summer, if it's beginning of fall, no one knows, but eventually there will be enough vaccine for everyone.
That's David Hopper from the McLean County Health Department with Eric Stock. Hopper says the county's IT department will use vaccine data to track where there are gaps. He says the health department will work with social service agencies to determine those who may not be able to get to a vaccination site. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. For months, healthcare workers have been the front line of defense in the ongoing fight against COVID-19. After several months, some have pushed themselves beyond their limits. Tim Shelley speaks with Dr. Samuel Sears, OSF Healthcare's Director of Behavioral Health Physician Services, about the toll the pandemic has taken on health workers and how he is helping to manage the resulting stress and tension.
So you can't really discuss how COVID's affecting healthcare workers without understanding the general toll it's taken on everybody, because at the end of the day, our healthcare workers are, you know, people just like everyone else. So you get the general, you know, weariness and challenge that everyone's gone through the pandemic. But then even in their work life, it's directly right in their face dealing with the challenges, both in terms of changes to the job and how the job's done. Many of them are caring directly for individuals with COVID, a, you know, disease that unfortunately has claimed many lives, and even for the folks that live through it, is often very challenging for the ones that end up in the hospital. And so you really don't have them getting a whole lot of escape from that between dealing with the repercussions in their personal life, their work life, and again, just some of the general concerns and fears that people can deal with in taking care of folks with a, you know, concerning infectious illness that really a lot of providers have never had to stop and think, I did sign up to, you know, put my life on the line to help other folks. But this really kind of hammers that home in ways that maybe they've never really dealt with before in their career.
I just imagine that this kind of thing just wears you down. I mean, especially working extra hours to maybe make up for other colleagues who are quarantined or infected themselves and off work.
And that's precisely it. Before the pandemic even struck, we knew that we were, you know, lower end providers than we needed within the country. There was a healthcare shortage across the nation. And then you add, okay, now we're going to have X percent of the workforce out quarantining so as to not risk getting other people sick. That's, you know, a significant strain on things. And as people work longer hours, that does contribute to their feelings of, can I keep pushing through? What do I do to take care of myself? How do I balance these things? And taking care of oneself is so vitally important through all of this. It's just like when they get you on a plane and say, okay, in the event of an emergency, you need to put on your breathing mask before you help anyone else with theirs. The same is true of taking care of yourself in the middle of this pandemic. If you're not taking care of yourself, sooner or later, you're going to break down, and then you're not going to be able to be there to help anybody else. Even when it feels like, I'm better than that guy, though. I can, help out more. You really do have to make that opportunity to stop and take care of yourself the priority. And sooner or later, you're going to be the one in need of help then, and you aren't going to be able to help.
Doctor, in your position as the Director of Behavioral Health Services, what's your role in making sure that the staff at the hospitals and I guess everywhere within the OSF network remain mentally and emotionally well?
We've done a lot of awareness campaigning during physician calls, staff education, some of our newsletters like the Spark, in terms of getting the information out about how important self-care is, the resources for helping maintain self-care, and just really the importance of really connecting with the things that help us be well. So the little things people can do every day, connecting with kind of things that renew us and support us in our wellness is first and foremost.
Dr. Samuel Sears is OSF Healthcare's Director of Behavioral Health Physician Services. He spoke with Tim Shelley. There isn't much the pandemic hasn't impacted, including the schedule at Community Players Theater. Their original plan was to stage Elf the Musical for the holiday season. As Laura Kennedy tells us, instead, for the COVID season, the organization has created an original virtual production laced with Christmas music and touched with nostalgia.
Community Players Theater presents Home for the Holidays, a virtual event that celebrates the spirit of the season. You can currently view it on their YouTube channel. Home for the Holidays takes the place of the originally planned Elf the Musical and the traditional holiday movie night at the theater. Chris Turvin, treasurer for Community Players, says Home for the Holidays is their gift to the community and also a gift to local talent.
Give our actors and our performers a place to be creative and give their art out to the community.
What was the discussion at Community Players about what you wanted to achieve with Home for the Holidays?
Well, we wanted to change it up a little bit. We did a straight review earlier this year. For the holiday, however, we wanted to try and make it more of a story-driven scenario where we chose holiday songs and then had the people put in applications so that we could figure out who went with what numbers. So then we used those numbers to kind of create a story around what we would normally be doing if it wasn't for COVID. So Home for the Holiday, the premise for the script comes down to one of our longtime stalwart at Community Players, Bruce Parrish. He's our theater historian, and he likes to joke with all of the patrons that he is the janitor for Community Players. The story starts with Bruce at the theater cleaning up all of the decorations and stuff that we were going to have out and about for the holiday movie night. Basically like a real-time example that we had to cancel the holiday movie night because of COVID, and he was just there kind of killing time, trying to make the best of a bad situation and clean up all of the fun we would have been having. When some of his friends, discover that he's there alone and try to remind him basically of all the fun that they would normally be having that in that holiday season. So it kind of starts with a flashback to the past of people performing different Christmas numbers. And then he gets a phone call from another friend, and they basically discuss stuff that people are doing today to kind of work around COVID and still celebrate Christmas. They all come together to kind of brighten his day.
You know, Chris, what this sounds like to me is like what you want for a Christmas special, which would include a lot of music, but also a hint of melancholy before you get to a happy ending. Because there's always just a little bit of sadness, it seems to me, in a lot of holiday tales.
That's a huge truth. A lot of people struggle during the holidays. Coming together is what overcomes that struggle for a lot of us, and I think that's kind of one of the drivers of this whole story.
Chris, what are some of the songs that we could expect to hear?
We've got everything from classic Christmas carols all the way through a 12 Days of Christmas that's kind of been COVID modified. That was actually rewritten by our membership chair, Missy Freeze. She rewrote that for us to provide new pages right now. We're lucky to have an onboard editor in our play reading chairman, Brett Catoni. He's got some mad editing skills, so he's bringing all the components together.
So are you filming this via Zoom, or are you having a camera crew that's socially distanced at the theater where people are performing?
When we assigned the numbers to people, they agreed to do their own filming. If it was a multiple-person scenario, we tried to keep it within a family group. It was not a socially distant issue. We did do some minor filming at the theater with Bruce Parrish as our janitor extraordinaire.
Chris, what do you hope audiences get out of Home for the Holidays?
Just a sense of belonging. I think that's one of the things that, you know, we all need around the holidays. It's just knowing that even though it's different this year, it doesn't mean that the love still isn't there.
That's Chris Turvin from Community Players Theater. You can catch Home for the Holidays on the CPT YouTube channel. I'm Laura Kennedy.
The board at Community Players Theater hopes to have another chance to stage Elf the Musical for the holidays once indoor seating becomes safe again. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.